Accession number 31299, reel 2.
How did you find the living in the climate in Iraq?
I didn't have any worry, but actually, I forget the date of it really, but I suppose we were there, it was quite a winter time sort of thing, but it was at times the heat would get to you, but of course you didn't do a lot, funnily enough. That's what I can never. We didn't have any exercises much. We didn't do much. You go in early in the morning, do a bit of PT or something, but then most of it was just looking after ourselves and making sure everything was okay.
Why do you think you were there then?
We were guarding. We were there to guard the convoys through to Russia. That was the reason we were there. They used to come up, and we. I mean, I don't say I did as much of that because I was at HQ all the time, but the other people, they used to have to be out and patrol and keep it. They probably did more than we did because HQ, we were rather lucky. I don't know why, but we always were. And of course, I don't know whether Wilkie Baird was with us, and he must have been. But when we did, I can't remember much of him there, not Wilkie Baird, but he was our commanding officer of the 10th Royal Barks, and he was a wonderful man. I believe, I understand, he died in 1947, because at the end of the war, he was, we went back to Egypt after Anzio, and we were disbanded. I mean, I went into the London Scottish first and then into the Royal Corps Signals. I volunteered to go to the Royal Corps Signals, which I was very pleased about in the long run, because I got to the Royal Corps Signals and they told me, can you drive? I said, yes, I can drive. So he said, oh. He said, would you like a nice little van? And they gave me an 800 weight Humber Snipe little van, which was six people in the back, and it was also long enough to take the spring bed, which I used to cart around eventually. I don't know where I got the spring bed, but I did get one. But life was what you made it, really. And being, as I said, I'm from the country, and being amongst a lot of Londoners, they didn't understand much about life. I mean, not out in the country, because places, quite often, I'd disappear in the evening, and they'd come, oh, gone. One time, I was sitting up eating apricots in a tree. They said, well, what are you up there for? I said, well, just having a few apricots. They said, apricots? They didn't even know what they were. And you'd be surprised. They were daft things like that. And I used to catch chicken, as we were travelling at different times, chicken, and we happened to stop, and I'd go round the hedge and get a chicken. And in half an hour, that was stripped. Done and in a jam tin boiling. I would just make sure I could feed myself. And I used to say, well, that smells good. And I used to go, always, if I could add the chance, having the little van was a big asset, because if I came across a few onions that I could purloin from somewhere, I used to stick them in the box with me. Keep a few in the van, so that if I did get stop and get a chicken, there was an onion to chop up and put in with it. And they often used to come round, and they did enjoy what I didn't want. But I was always capable. See, I was working at Sainsbury's. I learnt all these things. I mean, Christmas there, they'd get us. we used to have, it's a funny thing in Sainsbury's in those days, Christmas, leading up to it, you had 2 hours sleep at night. And of course, there was two of us that slept in. The other bloke was from way down the west, anyway. And they used to come and sleep in our beds. We had 2 hours, and then we'd be back down working. You worked all night, and you're doing things. And they even got me one time going out. I don't know where they got the bicycle from, the carryover bicycle. They must have had them bought in. They said, can you ride a bike? You get to going out and delivering orders. And I unfortunately came off that bike once. But not to hurt myself too much.
Was the shop open all
night? Yeah, the shop's the two of us that worked there, quite often it closed on Thursday afternoons. But what they used to do was what they called an open show. And the whole windows were all decorated with all the butters cut in the patterns and that. And he used to stay behind chopping up bacon, and I used to get so many boxes of butter and stuff all wired up ready for the weekend. And that as the half day was Thursday, I mean, it was ideal for the weekend. Of course, another thing with Sainsbury's, you never took notes. You took money over the counter, but you never took notes. They had to go to the desk and change a note and then come back and pay you. So, and I was there one day, and I said, there's something funny here. I said, I found, at the back of the till, because it was only a sliding drawer and wooden, I said, I found some coins at the back of it. So we searched it. And where you used to leave one on the top of the slide, you see, say, half a crown, and you wanted to give change, you left it there till you'd given the change, and then it used to slide off and go over the back, apparently, and there was money. I said to him, there's money all down there. I'll tell you the truth, when after I told them all this, I had to go and be searched. I thought, well, if he's found that, now what's he got in his pocket sort? Because you were never allowed to take any, you could take a handkerchief, but even your handkerchief you had to tuck in your white coat. You couldn't put your hands in your pockets. And I said, what's he been? See, I mean, when I was scrabbling underneath the counter, and they couldn't see what I was doing, I suppose. But they didn't believe me. But I got away with it anyway.
When was it that you were called up?
I was called up in 1940. I forget the dates. Is it not in there, that thing came, you walk, whatever it came?
There's your playbook here.
You want to see some weird things of earlier days of the war? I've got some there. Things that happened in 1938 and that. All to do, we knew the war was coming long before it happened.
How did you react then to the declaration of war?
Well, I stayed at home. I was the only one that stayed at home because I got a brother in the... Two of my youngest brother had already joined the Air Force, and the brother above me, he had been doing weekend Air Force. The next one was, he had already 12 years in the Navy, and the other one had done about 7 years in India. But he came when he came home. Eventually, he was he came home and was released before the beginning of the war. And he went to He lived in Coventry. Well, when he never got called up again. He got called up, but when they found what he was doing, he went back to Coventry because he was doing more important work in Coventry than he was. Would have done in any forces, but he was in the HLI, Highland Light Infantry, and there's a photograph in that thing there of him. He was the tallest man in the regiment, It was as big as him, if not bigger. I wouldn't like to say. But with a big pith helmet on, he never went on parade. Not in anything where they were... He'd go on parade, but not when it was a dress parade sort of thing, because he stood out, always head and shoulders above everybody else, being all mainly Scotchmen, really, I suppose. And they were all that much bit shorter. And he said he had quite a good life, really.
You were called up in July
1940? 1940, that's right, yeah. I went to Longmouth. I had to go to Longmouth for a start. Oh. And then down to Hook. That's where we start sort of in. And while we were at Hook, we were in... I lived in the Red House, it was, I can always remember. It was a big private house, but it was a Red House. Well, we were only sleeping on the floor. But we used to go out onto Hook Common and do PT and all that sort of thing. And then one night, we got called up, get dressed, fully armed and everything, and we had to go out and stand guard because they thought there was going to be a bit of a...
Invasion
sort of thing. And really, I spent all my first 2 years between, was it Southend? I forget where that was.
Folkestone,
that's right. I went to a school, there's a photograph of it there, of where we were signallers. That's when I got drafted into the signals. And we went from, and we were down at, where the tanks got on the beach, oh dear. Right down in Devon, anyway.
Flattened.
Yeah, they brought one of the tanks out of the water and it's up on there, it's a monument on the end of the beach. And we were there, standing guard, and we all sorts of things. Matter of fact, we were billeted in a golf club, the pavilion of a golf club, and that was at Salt and Sands area, and we used to have to go to the private house. Even the golf club never had a bath. It had running water, but it had no bath or anything. And we used to go in, the local people, once a week, somehow got a bar, shower and do in one of the private houses. But when we were at Salt and Sands, the tide was out, you could have walked straight through to Ilfracombe. But you had to do it very quick, mind you. But otherwise you had to go back into the village and then along the main road into Ilfracombe. But with that... That was a good billet, actually. Yeah. But it was only us signallers in there. I mean, it was all signals.
How was it that you came to join the signals? Was that through choice, or were you just...
You were sort of picked out and more or less told to go there, I suppose, really. But, I mean, I don't know whether they picked... whether people were a bit clever or something, but because you had to learn so much in the signals, I mean... But anyway, I went to and the photo. He's got a photograph in there of when I was down there, and we're all from different regiments, and everyone's got it written on the back.
How did you find the adjusting to the military lifestyle?
Well, having been in the church, lads, for a few years as a youngster growing up. I think that broke us in, because, when we went to the church lads camp, I mean, you were behaved exactly like military. I mean, everything was, there was bugles and everything going just the same. So I think, really, that gave me a good grounding to start with. So I always wanted to join in with most things, so that's how I got on really reasonably well, I suppose.
Dad, is it fair to say that also your father was as hard as nails?
Oh, yes. Oh,
he was eight children, it was like being in a barrack block most of the time.
Oh, is it? Actually, oh, my father. I don't know what he was in. He was in some sort of thing. As a matter of fact, starting a little bit, he used to take three horses. This is before the war even started. And my parents to move into Wales, but he used to take three horses into the hills and break them in three at a time. He was with the horses, he was absolutely wizard.
He was a horse breaker for the cavalry in the First World War.
Yeah, he was horse break them, and he also cut hair, by the way. But we all said, well, it must have been, they were proper clippers, but it was so used to trimming horses, I expect. But he was hard as nails. And I'll admit, I was, if he hit me with anything, I'll throw it in the river. And I wish I'd never done it now in a way, but he used to have a beautiful hunting crop with a silver and bone handle and that, and he hit me with that one day, and I threw it in the river. But when he hit me, he always used to take me out in the shed, because my sisters, they'd be in there crying. they'd cry just the fact that I was getting hit. But he could never make me cry, and that's what annoyed him. I was a bloody fool, really. I used to take it and just. I was really stubborn. I can remember one day, I don't know what I'd done, but I went, he said, get up to bed. So I had to go up to bed and stay in bed. But when they were all quiet and sent in, I got dressed, came down, and the house was a sitting room there, a front room there, which nobody used, by the way, only on musical days, because. And the other rooms there, but in between were the bottom of the stairs and the stairs going up. I mean, you could, at the top of the stairs, you could put a bed across under the window and use that if you wouldn't, which we very nearly had to, I agree. Of course, there was, at one time, there were five of us in one room, three boys in one bed and two girls in the other. And there was my mother sleeping, and she got either one of the last two, just about. And I've now only got one sister alive. About eight of us there were.
Did your mother work?
She when we lived at Brinton's, we were in a cottage in the ground sort of thing. I think she went in and helped out at times, but she never actually went to work after that. My father wouldn't have it, because he was never out of work. And I can remember at times I lost a day at school because he'd forgotten to take his lunch, and he lived at sand and gravel pit. He worked at the sand and gravel pits near Sunbury Station. Eventually, he became the governor there, the main man there, but. I had to walk there with his lunch on those days. Of course, there was something when he came home, we had to, I forget what it was, whether it was kippers or something. Because, I'll tell you another thing now. Mac Fisher's, at the fish shop, which became Mac Fisher's, was at the top of, in the Eaton High Street. And I used to, the block man there and his wife used to live in the house at the behind it. And I used to, for her, I used to go, years ago, go up and pick, what's the bunches of blackberries? Elderberries or something?
Sloes. Elderberries?
No. You get them, they're all like little teeny ones and big.
Elderberries,
I suppose it was. And they used to give me a flag bag, and I'd go up into, because so easy in Eaton, you only had to walk through the houses the other side and the shops the other side of the road, you're out in the wilds. And I used to go and pick this big bag full and bring it back for them. And I used to get a shilling. And when we went up for the fish, I mean, some did go up every day, but I mean, certain days you went up, you took the flag bag which they supplied, and you went to the block man and so, and then he got to Mr. Street, he'd got all things there already, and he knew you were coming, and bag full of fish, and he'd shout, sixpence, or another time he'd say shilling, and you go and pay at the desk, and then you walk out. And I don't know if we got, to me, thinking of it now, it happened all those years ago. But then I'd go home, then my mother would say, oh, what we got today? Just all down. Oh, she said, well, take that. She says, and take that down to, oh, what was his name now?
Neighbour.
A neighbour right at the end. There were five houses along, sort of thing, the back. And but you had to go careful when you had, of course, they had a dog called Nigger. And if he came out, you surprised him. He's quite all right normally, but for smiles, he would have had you. He was that way. But I used to take it down there, and whatever I'd paid, she'd always give me sixpence. So I took that back to my mother. But another thing, we had a front garden. The pub was over there, and we were opposite. We both had front gardens, and the pub grew loads of artichokes all along the fence, and I suppose they used to eat them. But my father grew, we had a rambler rose jetting right across from the front door to the two windows, and then all the rest was lovely flowers. And people used to come on a Sunday or wherever they'd go, a bunch for the hospital. And he charged them sixpence or a shilling according to what they had. And they took that supplied the hospital with flowers. But there was always some way of making money. But another thing, opposite the pub was another back alley which went round and into the back of another pub in the High Street, which was the quick way in from where we were. But there was a Mr. Croxon there. Matter of fact, he was a photographer. And five of us, no, Vera was on it, so it was only Kenneth and Nina that weren't on this photograph, taken there. And I was just standing, and my sister, 3 years younger than me, she was in arms. And there's a photograph of us, all five of us, stuck there.
When it came to your signals training, could you explain a bit more about the process of...
Well, we went down to... there you run... I mean, you sat for hours listening to... and Akar and whatever they like to say, call it now. I couldn't do it now, I'm sure, I can assure you. But you used to have to read it, and you'd write it down. I don't know how we did it, really, at times. But, of course, eventually, all that was cut out. It was all verbal. I mean, they realised it was just a waste of time. Because while you were dot-dotting, the Germans could always read that. Just the same. So verbal, I mean, to listen to somebody verbal, the Germans wouldn't have understood it, I can assure you. The way they spoke, I mean, we were all different sort of groups, and it was all incident in the end. Said it was just as well, and it saved a lot of time, because you had to write it down, and then you had to read it back, and oh dear, it was signalling was, but we had great big wireless sets we carried on our backs, and they were heavy.
Were you taught how to make the wirelesses, or were they just taught you how to do all the wiring and everything?
No, they gave them to us, and we had to look after them. I mean, if anything went wrong, we would there were certain people that could cope with them if you were lucky, but if you kept going yourself, really. But I don't think I don't seem to have had much trouble with those. They were heavy on your
brain. Were you trained to do the wiring and replace the valves and things like that?
Oh, yes, if necessary. We've always got spares. And, of course, your aerial, some weird aerials, I can assure you, went off those sets at times. And then you'd hear somebody and they'd, what's that? What station they got? And you probably, I don't know whether he was in those days, was sort of Jack Payne and his music on the and somebody said, well, they want to shut that up a bit quick, they'd be in trouble. But it's weird. But you could, if you use the earphones, you could listen to a bit of music now and again. But generally speaking, you don't do it. I mean, it was in a sense stupid, really. But several things got done like that.
You mentioned that there was a bit of an invasion scare.
Oh yes, there was.
What sort of concern did people have about the likelihood of a German invasion until you were posted? Obviously?
Well, they were really worried. I mean, we all went rushed out and we were sent miles in inland along this because it was all open country there. That's the beauty of it, and we were spread out, and naturally we could talk to one another, but. Nothing ever came of it. That was the daft bit about it. We didn't know. We, to this day, couldn't have said whether it was just done purposely or whether it was a scare. That's the truth. But I'll tell you that we used to go onto this common for PT. And of course, you had to strip down. You had slippers, but you only had shorts on. You weren't allowed to wear anything else. So we're standing there one day, and the officer looked up, and he was looking at them. He said, that man over there, take that vest off or whatever you're wearing there. And the poor bloke, it was all hair, I'm not kidding. He was completely black hair all over his back and his front. It was just like an animal in a sense. Not as thick as an animal, admitted, but it was all black hair. So, and from the distance, it looked just as if he'd got a pullover or something on. And the officer came over, of course, to him in the end, and obviously he sort of felt such a fool. He said, "Oh, come on, we'll go back." There were things used to happen, really. But always found that once you were in action, the officers were grand. Even the sergeant majors. But I do know of. One sergeant major got killed, but he wasn't killed by the Germans.
What was your opinion of the sergeant majors then while you were training? Well,
most of them were stupid. They were boneheaded because if they treated everybody as if they were just dogs, that was their trouble, which they're not allowed to do now, unfortunately. But then again, it's got too soft. It's gone the other way, I think. But no, sergeant majors, the company sergeant majors, funnily enough, were worse than the regimental sergeant majors. Because the regimental sergeant majors, he was sort of above it all. But the company sergeant majors, they pick on somebody and you do it regularly. In the end, it didn't pay him in the way. As I said, it was the company sergeant major that got killed. But he was, I honestly think he was shot in the back. That was when we were later on in action. Which fortunately didn't concern me, but...